For the last 3 years, my life has been consumed by noctuids. Particularly, I've been trying to put together a book on about 800 species of eastern noctuids. About 730 of these we've reared or will be figured in the book. This has been a really great project. I've enjoyed it, but doing this and coming across these larvae, every once in a while you come across things that just scream at you as just being wrong in terms of the classification, our current classification. And I've worked through about four or five of these, and one of the most interesting ones that came up over the last year that I wasn't supposed to do. Involves this creature. This is Abogluma duomaculata. It's not very large. It's only about 9 millimeters, but it's really an intriguing larva. We beat this off of a lichen-encrusted sort of coastal scrubby area in South Texas. Basically, an area that was very, very rich in lichens and algae. It was unusual, struck me as being exceptional for a couple reasons. One, it had the longest CD of any of the 800 species that I've ever seen, in fact, any of the noctuids. I don't have any idea why the CD are so long, but some of the CD coming off this animal are more than twice the body length of the animal. It has another really outstanding aspect of it, and it has essentially, I guess, a living cocoon. It takes about 4 or 5 hours to build this cocoon. It meticulously goes up, excises a piece of lichen, and then comes down and then weaves that individually into the wall of the cocoon. And then I guess it's essentially photosynthetic. During the period that the caterpillar is turning into a pupa inside, and then maybe over even a course of the winter. So I thought this was great, and I just thought I would put this together in a little short communication. And so I had the larva, which was really outstanding, the cocoon, which was even more exceptional, and a small moth. So I sent it to John Brown sort of for an internal review, and he said that was really great, but it wasn't enough. So he actually wanted a full species description. He thought, and it was for good reason, this is the first time any hypanodine in the New World had ever been looked at. And so it made sense. I didn't like it though because it was such a small larva and I had this one individual. So what I did when I do all of these kinds of things, I am completely outgunned and outmatched by John Rollins and Tim McCabe, who actually know way more about all of this. So I asked both of them if they could help me out, if they were familiar with these creatures. And Tim McCabe came on board. He had reared a number of creatures, not actually this one, but a related species, Brimleana, which I'm about to show you. It has a very checkered taxonomic history. I guess that's one of the take-home messages from my study. I guess this Abobloma, this creature, had been moved from the Atlantiani to the Hypodonidae to the Strepismanini to, very recently actually, just in 2005, Fibiger described a new noctuid subfamily, the Areopterinini. I hate it when I can't even pronounce the names of the organisms I study, but in any case, Fibiger and LaFontaine had recently moved this creature into yet another subfamily. So this is it. It's a striking creature. It has missing prolegs on both A3 and A4, which is very exceptional. These hypertrophied cedi that, again, extend way off the screen, off to the left. It has a papillated integument, more so than anything that I've seen in the 800 so species that I've looked at. Enormous papillations that are actually visible maybe to people in the back of the room, but certainly when a caterpillar is in hand. And it's kind of remarkable here that even the fifth proleg is reduced, and then it's shifted clear back to the back of the segment, and then the proleg on the following segment is shifted forward, so they essentially work together. What we're making here is analogous to a geometrid. They're essentially losing those mid-abdominal prolegs. McCabe also mentioned during the course of the study, once he came on board, that there was another noctuid that had almost identical male genitalia called Megidia formosalis. And he said that we really ought to look at that. So, of course, he also had larvae. And it was just remarkable to me to find out how many putative synapomorphies we found between the two insects. They both had the same very unusual proleg arrangement segments. The first four abdominal segments were elongated. And so it goes as you go down this thing. The D1 CD are pointed forward. But the D2CD are pointed backwards, and I guess what is really important here, though, is that one of these was in the Areopterinae, and one of these was in the Scalica campinae, and that just couldn't be. Two other characters that are shared, is, and I won't be able to share this, but it's important, is the venter, both of those caterpillars, is jet black, very, very much contrasting with their cryptic coloration here. And probably the most remarkable feature of these caterpillars is that most noctuids, in fact most noctuids, have six stomata on the side of the head. That's how you can tell a caterpillar from, say, a hymenopteran or coleopteran. But these are usually in a hemispherical arc, and in both Aboblena and Nagidia, the stomata are split into two groups. Four of these are split off up towards the L-ceta, and two remain their ancestral position near the antenna. So it turns out that Aboblena and Nagisha, I would be surprised if they didn't have an immediate common ancestor, but they share perhaps as many as a dozen putative synapomorphies. We wanted to look more widely and just look at what was going on in these very basal noctuids. And it turned out, and I don't really know why, but Aboblena shares remarkable similarities also with the type of the Hypanodinae, and it also shares a lot of very special features with the Eubromini. Just to go through one example again, this would be the type of yet another subfamily. The segments here are elongated. We've got the same arrangement of the prolegs here with the A5 shifted backwards and A6 shifted forward. Even more remarkably, it also, as far as I'm concerned, this is a globally unique synapomorphy, this idea that they build these pendulant cocoons oftentimes out of lichen fragments. And so this is shared between Aboblena and the Hypanodinae. So the take-home message for me at this point is that we need a Tree of Life people or some other people to take a hard look at the higher classification of these lower noctuids. I think things have been oversplit to a very large measure. And we need more immatures and some molecular data to look at this. You always get these interesting spin-offs or things that come out of your work that you're never expecting. So I thank John Bound for this. We would never got this far. Bark rusters include Aboblena. They are typically cryptic, dorsiventrally compressed, so they can sort of be bark. And they oftentimes have these laterally extended portions of their body, and they're elaborated. They could be seedy or lappets or rootlet seedy. Just to show you an example, this is Lasiocampid, Talipe velida. These are the lappets that lappet moths have, and they have these hairs that shoot off laterally. Help them do this. So there is a caterpillar there. But the interesting thing that came out of our study, and I think we're the first to report this, is that these bark rusters actually have flash coloration. And I'm unfortunately, I can't show you this in Aboblena. The lower left is Aboblena, but again, it has jet black, and when this thing flips over, it jumps out at you. But I do have the ventures of these other creatures, and I found a new good use for a flatbed scanner. Really spectacular flash coloration, I think, and you'd never ever know or appreciate this, but these things, when they get flipped off the, a log or something like this, would probably jump out, and these must function analogously to the hind wings of a catocala, or maybe even the blue flash of a morpho wing. But as soon as they roll over, the search image is gone. When we were beating for Aboblena, we also got geometrids that had never been reared before from lichens, and archaeids had never been reared before from lichens lophosiae. So we got interested in this whole idea of lichen feeding and alga feeding, and did a review where Tim McCabe and I have reared about 38 species of macrolepidopterans from algae or lichens. Right now our set for North America includes members of Archaeidae, Geometridae, and Noctuidae, and actually eight different noctuid subfamilies, but they're oversplit, so that doesn't matter. And then there's 34 to 38 is that we've reared on Protococcus algae. And so this includes Lophosiae and Archaeids, which are generally thought to be or regarded as lichen feeders. And our data, or at least from our rearings, these range from extreme algal specialists, such as the one shown here, Clemencia albata, to some really widely prolificous things. They do eat algae and lichens, but I think they eat cardboard. I haven't tried it. But the most important point from this is that algae and not lichen appears to have primacy in the diet. So this it's a bit of a misnomer or mischaracterization in our current literature as to what these organisms are doing. We were able to rear them all successfully on algae. We were not able to rear any successfully only on lichens, unless there was algae associated with that lichen, and often that lichen had to be wetted to make sure that that protococcus was growing. So then we submitted the paper and we thought we were good to go, but then Don LaFontaine wanted us to do more. And so he sent it back and said, please say something about the evolution of algal feeding and lichen feeding. So at this point, we've identified at least three different origins within the Lycaenid butterflies. There's the South African group, Anemoine geometrids, and then if the noctuids have many multiple cases, certainly in the Norids, Archaeids, a couple lineages, and then if we expand this out, about five different subfamilies in the quadruped noctuids and one subfamily in the trifid noctuids. In summary, from what we've seen so far, we can say that there are multiple origins among macrolepidopterans. There are many, many origins, at least a dozen I would guess, but there's only two large clades. There's the Lethosiine Archaeids and the Leptinine Lycaenids in South Africa. And it's funny that the only two large clades are brightly colored. And conversely, all the smaller radiations have cryptic and often lichen-colored adults. And a polyphagy commonly appears as an evolutionary antecedent to lichen-feeding lineages. And so I don't really have a summary. I do have more questions or research agendas. And so we really feel that the classification for the basal noctuids has been oversplit, and we could use some more data and more taxon sampling there. I don't know why the two largest clades, lichen feeders, are also brightly colored. And so we need to explore the role of lichens in the diet and the importance of sequestration in the chemical ecology of these insects.
Thank you.